If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a beautiful Thursday afternoon and promises of even nicer weather to come. So how's your career going? How's your life going? Do you need a coach or so? There's a lot of talk about executive coaches and life coaches and all of that. And one of them's in the studio today. Art Wild is an integral master coach, and he joins us. Art, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Really great to be here.
I should maybe reveal that you and I have known each other for 20 years.
Has it been that long?
Right, yeah, and you've done absolutely nothing for me whatsoever in that time. What is it to be an integral master coach? What does that mean?
You know, it's a type of coaching. It's my training as a coach, so I'm an executive coach.
Okay.
Or a leadership coach is a term that most people may know, too. And as an integral master coach, what that means is integral is just whole. Complete.
So it's not like a brand. You didn't study the integral method?
Actually, I did study it. As part of it's trademarked by Integral Coaching Canada, where I went to school for 2 years to learn about coaching.
And what's interesting to me is, in a way, you took your own advice before you became a coach, right? I mean, you were in the corporate world, still are a little bit, but decided that you wanted to find something different and just pursued this.
Yeah, that's, you know, I got to that point in my career. I was, 20 years working brand marketing and a whole, you know, other career or roles. And I was like, I got to that pesky question, what's next?
Right.
And I just could not shake it loose. And when I left my last company, I was like, you know, I've got to figure this out. And that's when I went on what I now call an 8-month sabbatical, which is 8 months of being dazed and confused and figuring all this out. So, yeah, I said, let's figure this out. I didn't have a roadmap. And I went about it roundabout way. But at the end of it, I realized, gosh, I'm aligning who I am with what I do and having a blast doing it. It's like, how can I share this with other people? And that's when I discovered coaching.
Right. You're not one of those guys, like most of us in the suburbs, willing to put our head down and go through the grind day after day. You did a little sort of self-evaluation and realized that you could get more out of it.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where I felt like I didn't have a choice anymore. It's like, it's just time to figure this out. And I hear this question all the time. And I decided for me, it's like, what's my next? What's more meaningful? And how can I just do my part in a meaningful way?
All right, so you talk about this idea that if we can align who we are with how we live, that everything will be better off. And, well, I suppose the tough part of that is figuring out who we are, right?
Yeah.
How do you figure out who you are?
You know, for me and a lot of people, it's slowing down, taking a moment, slow down, and then, well, I'll speak for myself on this one. It's like getting out of my comfort zone and getting into places that give me new perspective that, while it's scary and uncomfortable, you know, I took improv here in Second City, Chicago, the scariest 10 months of my life.
Right.
Yet it gave me a completely different perspective that learned a lot about myself, things that I wanted to see and some things that I didn't want to see, but it was a learning experience.
It's tough to make a change like that, though. I'm one of those guys where I have a routine and I do the same thing day after day and go to the same parties year after year where we saw each other last week. But, you know, I mean, it takes courage sort of to step out and make a big change like that.
Yeah, it was not easy, but I just feel like I was being pulled into, like, it's time to figure this out.
Okay.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. Okay, enough about you. So now you're doing this for other people, right?
Yeah.
And the thing so how does it come about that someone calls and says, hey, I need a career coach, I need a life coach? Is it about business or is it about life, or how does it work?
You know, a lot of times it comes through business. It's like, you know, it comes from a lot of leaders that just want to be really make a bigger difference in where they are, and really make a change for themselves so that benefits them and their organization. So it comes through business a lot of times, like they just want to be more effective.
Right. So it's not someone who says, I need to change my personal life. It's more, I need to step up my professional life.
And that's the big news. It starts with professional life, but very quickly learn that those two are the same.
What do you mean?
So what we do at work, we're the same person. We might behave differently in both places, but we're the same person inside. So what they find is like, oh, wow, I'm doing this differently at work. This is totally impacting my home life. So suddenly, dad or mom's better person to be around and just better all the way around.
So when you start with a new client, how do you begin? You must start in the office and not start at the house.
You know, you're talking about just physical locations.
So. No. I guess that's my problem. I'm still dividing them up, and you're saying they're not divided at all.
And you know what? And this is very common. Most people are like, where does this begin? They don't even know who to start or where to start. So we start with, what is it you're wrestling with? And wherever we're doing that. And it usually starts with work. And that's what we work on, frankly, but it's just there's a spillover effect to the rest of our life. And it starts with, what do you want to work on? And understanding, it's like, how are you trying to get there now? And what's many times we learn is like they're trying to get to an island and they're trying to run there, forgetting that there's water in between. It's like, right. Have you considered using a boat?
It occurs to me that you are the guy then. If someone brings you in, you are the guy who has to confront these people with some hard truths.
Mm.
And that's why you're here, because this is what we were talking about before. When you know, if someone hires you and they believe in what they're doing, but you can see that they're doing something that's just so destructive to themselves. How do you tell them?
You just tell them, it's always grounded in where they want to go. You know, so for example, it's like, how is that getting you to where you want to go? Here's the soccer player that's always played soccer all his life and suddenly wants to go play baseball. It's like, has his passion for baseball. And there's some skills that, the things that carry over, the discipline,
right,
the teamwork. But when they step up to the plate and they try to kick the ball, you know,
okay, but that's a comfortable analogy, but I'm talking about someone who's just an SOB to his family and his coworkers. So you say, you know, you're just a jerk sometimes.
How is that helping you get where you want to go? Is that really in line with what you're trying to accomplish here? Help me understand how that helps you. And by the way, where is that coming from? And you quickly, what's amazing about this process is people that, especially in leadership roles that feel really isolated, where do you go to put those vulnerable things out there? It's like, you know what? The fact is, I'm really scared.
Does it make a difference? Does it work? Does what you do work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what? That's what my clients tell me.
Does it ever not? Has there been one where you're like,
I question it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah. It's just because I don't know. As much as all my training is to try to walk in other people's shoes, but I can never fully get there. So I rely on, it's like, you know, just today I saw a client. Is this working for you? Absolutely. You know, I learned this and that. It's like, but I always have to check. I never assume.
That's Art Wild, an integral master coach. How do people find out more about you or get a hold of you?
You know, go to LinkedIn, search Art Wild, Wilds with an E. Or better yet, you know, you just want to have a conversation. If there's anything curious, shoot me an email, art@artwild.com, and we'll chat.
art@artwild.com. Art, buddy, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
You too, Steve. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. We'll talk marketing in the next half hour with John Byrne. He's the co-host of Monday Morning Marketing. You hear that at WGN Plus with Elise Glink. Elise is by from time to time as well. Also, speaking of guests who are by from time to time, Bill Geiger from Geiger Wealth Management is in the studio. Mr. Geiger, welcome back.
Nice to be here again, sir.
So we're going to talk this week about a spend down strategy.
Yeah.
And, let's just start with a definition and explain to me what exactly a spend-down strategy is. I'm not sure I understand it.
Basically, it's referring to income and retirement. When you stop working and there's no more paychecks, for most people in this country, their Social Security is not going to be enough to pay the bills each month.
Sure.
So as you're getting ready for retirement, part of retirement planning, a really important part of retirement planning, is the income planning part. Where am I going to get the money each month to pay my bills? Because if you don't have a steady stream of income coming in, you're basically just spending your principal.
So the spend down, it is a little misleading to me then, because when I think spend down, I think I'm taking money out of my principal, but that's not quite what we're talking about.
No. And you know, a lot of people advocate that. We had a couple come into our office in 2012 that had retired with a $1 million portfolio in 2000. And between pulling money out of their principal and market downturns, $1 million went to $184,000 in 12 years. They were almost out of money.
They didn't have that in their plan, did they?
No, they didn't have a portion of their portfolio that was designed to create income. We had a couple, 60-year-old couple, come in the other day on the flip side of that, and they wanted to retire in 7 years. And we used some alternative income strategies to actually produce about $66,000 on an $800,000 commitment to that strategy. So they're going to have an income for life without worrying about running out of that money. Well, and that's what you need. It's kind of like a pension.
Well, what are the different sort of strategies? I mean, how do you figure out what to do?
Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to figure out just how much money do you need. You know, and surprisingly, a lot of people don't know what their lifestyle costs.
Right.
And one of the first things we do is we sit down and we figure out just what goes out of the door every month.
Well, that's one of the things I've learned in doing this show is that, you know, I think I have a plan, but then you talk about, you know, people who have a written down plan of something firm. For me, I'm like, well, I'm saving. I have a plan. Well, that's not really a plan. I'm just saving, and I'm hoping one day it's going to work out.
Well, you used a four-letter word there.
I did. Which one? I tried to avoid those on the air.
Hope.
Hope, yeah.
And hope is not a strategy. It's and I don't mean that personally, but I've had people sit down in my office and say, what's your retirement plan then? Because I don't know. I just hope the sucker gets bigger.
and it doesn't work?
No, it doesn't work. Oh. Because if they're in the wrong places and you go through another 2008, whatever they had could be 50% of that.
Right.
And then what do you do?
Well, tell me about what's the 4% rule you refer to?
Well, the 4% rule is what we used to say you could draw out of a mutual fund stock-based type portfolio. Used to say that.
So of your retirement portfolio, you could pull out 4% and run that a year.
And the financial planning community changed that recently, and they brought it down to 3%, which really isn't much. You can take 3% of a $1 million portfolio, you got $30,000 a year. That's not a lot in retirement terms. There's better ways to do it. There's different strategies for creating income. And if you're just pulling money out of your portfolio, you're spending principal, right?
Right. So
and that principal's got to be made back up somehow. And if it's not, you're in trouble.
And hope won't do it?
No, hope won't do it. You actually need to have an income plan. It's one of the most important parts of a retirement plan is where am I going to get this income on a dependable, stable basis for the next 20 to 30 years?
What do you make of reverse mortgages? Is that a wise thing?
That's kind of like the last ditch.
Okay.
That's when you're really running out of money and you start spending down your house. You know, I know you're going to talk about folks coming in for a financial plan with us, but I just want to say that when you do that today, I'm going to meet personally with the first five people that call in, and we're going to, on a complimentary basis, we'll help them put together not just a retirement plan, but a very detailed income plan to help them get through retirement and sleep at night.
I'm going to tell them about that right now. Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Very good. Good to be here, sir.
You know, nothing could be more frustrating than working hard your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, and then having no idea how you're going to make your nest egg last 20 to 30 years or more. That's where Bill Geiger, Chicago's retirement planning expert, comes in. Bill joins us on Thursdays. He'd like to make this very special offer to you, a full-blown financial plan, a $3,000 value, absolutely free, no obligation, to the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Just call 800-681-2498. That number again, 800-681-2498. You deserve the security and independence of knowing that you're doing the right thing with your retirement nest egg. Be one of the first five callers for your complimentary, no-obligation, full-blown financial plan. You've earned it. Now it's time for your money to start working for you. Call Geiger Wealth Management today at 800-681-2498. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch Thursday afternoon on Michigan Avenue. The tulips in full bloom. They look nice coming up on Mother's Day. Christina Hines is in the studio. She's a founding member and partner at Parker Gale, a private equity firm. Christina, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Not a bad view, is it?
Not at all. I was wondering if I could just stay here the rest of the afternoon.
You're welcome to. I'm going to leave, but you can stay here as long as you like. What is Parker Gale?
So Parker Gale is a private equity firm that myself and four co-founders started about 18 months ago after working together for a little over 13 years.
Yeah.
We find founder-owned technology businesses. We convince them to sell to us.
Yeah.
And then we take them, invest in areas like sales and marketing, product, team. So basically try to, you know, get them enterprise ready, if you will, and then we sell them 3 to 7 years later.
So you're the next level.
We are.
Right. So I come up with an idea of, you know, a parking app or some sort of app. Apps, you're talking?
Well, so that might be more like venture capital.
Okay.
So we do more established businesses. So a lot of ours, the founder might have started it 15 years ago. And so, but had a great idea, has a great product.
Can you give me an example of one?
Sure. So one that we just bought last year here in the suburbs in Northbrook.
Uh-huh.
It's called One Plus Corp. So literally 20-year-old business. Sensor technology that goes into trash compactors. We lovingly call it our Internet of Trash business.
Uh-huh.
So, to be as simple as possible, what it does is it notifies the grocery stores or retailers or the Tribune building that their compactor in the back is full. So therefore come pick it up now. Okay. So that is an example of a technology business. It's a sensor technology with a software, you know, monthly recurring software piece.
And the guy or the woman who created it did it very well, brought it up to a certain level.
Yep.
And it's time for some capital to bring it to the next one.
That's right. So it took a couple years. We had to convince him that we were the right partners to take care of his baby. But you're right. And so we said, hey, you've taken it to here. Now let us take it to there.
Is it your cash or where does the cash come from?
The cash comes from our investors. So we have to go out and fundraise. And so that is, you know, pensions, endowments, families, all of the above.
What part of the business do you like the most? Finding the companies or recruiting the money or what is it?
Finding the businesses.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's all fun. I love what I do, but that part is awesome because you're doing something different almost every day.
Yeah, okay, I get that, and I can see that, and then you recognize something that can really grow.
Right.
But you talked about, you know, it's their baby, too, so you sometimes have to go in and say, I need you to... I talk to a lot of authors. And,
right.
And for an author, you know, it's, like, great to have a book be made a movie.
Right.
But for it to be made a movie, they've got to let go. And I would imagine you need these owners to let go a little bit, too. Is that hard to do?
Perfect question. So, in many cases, we will have an executive, a CEO that we've worked with or that we've known for years, and we will sort of bring them alongside with us when we're looking at buying one of these businesses from the founder, and we'll work it out from the very beginning where the founder maybe they'll stay on the board, okay, or they'll stay for some transition period, but they're not going to be running the business, let's say, day to day.
I think I would just go. I think I don't know.
Yes, take your money and run.
Well, it'd be harder in a way to witness someone changing what you created, I would think.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe we're lucky or we're good. But if you talk to the founders that we've worked with and bought their businesses, you would hear that I think for the most part they're just very happy with what happened. I mean, yeah, I mean, we have to, right? We have to give our investors.
You're not holding a gun to anyone.
No, we have to give our investors their phone numbers, right? And let them call and say, hey, did these guys really do what they say they do? And apparently that's what's happening
because
we have investors.
Well, you know, they talk a lot about two women in venture capital or private equity.
Yes.
But there's only three of you, right?
Right. Less than 10%.
Hey, do you find that?
And yeah, absolutely. I'm usually the only person, in the room, at conferences and events. I mean, yes, the truth is less than 10% of private equity employees are women, and then less than half of that, less than 5% are in senior, you know, or partner level positions like myself.
Does it matter?
To me, it doesn't. I mean, it does to matter. It matters to me on what we're going to do to change that.
Yeah.
But it didn't prevent me from getting to where I was, right?
Right. So,
very important to me.
It is, that the more women are making the decisions.
Yes.
And why is that? What would change if it were that case?
Yeah. There's tons of data out there that suggest if you have women, if you have women on a board, running, you know, in executive positions or on the investor side, performance and returns are above if you don't have a woman in the room. Okay. I think that's because, right, we have a different perspective. We assess risk differently. There's all kinds of things that we do differently. And so having that gender diversity in the room and when making decisions, the data suggests it leads to better outcomes.
Do you think, are you all women? led the company?
No, I'm the only one.
You're the only one. Okay.
Yes.
Because I was going to ask if that would impact on what companies you invest in, too. Because I do like the idea of a separate set of eyes or a different sort of brain looking at possibilities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so if there are women, one of the businesses we bought was, the CEO was a woman. So there you go. Of the two businesses we bought last year.
Okay.
We can look at it from what Parker Gale does, too. So our associate, who's sort of the junior pre-MBA spot, okay, in our world, she is a woman. She, Cass, we brought her in last year, and we specifically went out hoping to find someone exactly like her. And so we were lucky enough to do that. But I think you have to, again, you have to be deliberate about it, both internally at your own firm at Parker Gale, and then think about it as you're looking at businesses as well.
Yeah, so it's Mother's Day. And you know what I almost just said?
What?
I almost just said, you must put in a lot of time. How do you... Wouldn't that be terrible? Because that's exactly... That's just such the stereotype that people don't ask men that. But we are in here to talk about Mother's Day. You're a mother of two young kids. And so you're doing it. You're juggling. And what's your advice to other young moms who are trying as well?
Yeah. And truth be told, I waited, right? I waited until my mid-30s because I was so sort of laser focused on my career, which worked for me. But I think... being a mom has given me such a better perspective, right, of life. So I used to be just work, work, work. That's all you do. And I probably had less patience and compassion for those around me, right? Right, because like, oh, why do you have to leave for this? Or, you know, and so, of course, that completely changed when I became a mom.
Right.
And so I think it's given me a lot more patience, which makes me a better partner at work, a better investor. And I think... the advice that I would have is you cannot be the perfect everything. And trying to hold yourself to a standard like that is not going to work.
I love your answer because you almost kind of admitted that you were a fender earlier.
Yeah.
And it's like we all have to have our own life experiences, whether we're men or women, parents or not parents, to, it informs us. It tells us what we do.
Absolutely.
Do you take things that you learn from work and apply them to being the mom of young kids?
I think my organizational skills.
Do you ever give CEOs a timeout? I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. we could call it that. So I think, at work, I have so many things at any one time. And let's say I have 5 to 6 companies that are sort of mine that I sit on the board of that I'm, responsible for. I have to be very organized, right? And so I think that has helped me be, honestly, a better mom because I am... whatever I'm doing, I'm laser focused. I think this would be another sort of piece of advice, right? It's like, okay, when I'm at work, now that might be for 14 hours, but when I'm there, I'm doing my work, giving it my 100% attention. When I walk in the door to let my husband, who stays at home, by the way, so I'm very blessed because he takes care of them. But when I walk in the door, then I'm 100% them.
Christina Hines is a founding member and partner at Parker Gale. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much.
I hope we'll talk again.
Same here.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Ori. And Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Thursday afternoon, 12:51. Whoa, John Byrne is in the studio. John, welcome.
Thank you.
The
good to be
co-host
here.
Of the... Monday morning marketing podcast.
What's the name
of
that podcast?
Plus. I've got so many podcasts. It's like when I want to I just want to market my business. I just want it out there. I want everyone to know what I do. And I want to do it in an easy way, but it's overwhelming.
It is pretty overwhelming. It's easy to get overwhelmed when you have all these sources and all these people and all these consultants telling you, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. There was a study that Elise Glink and I, who's the co-host, we're going to talk a little bit about.
I always remember the podcast name when she's here, just so you know.
Okay, well, that's good.
She scares me more.
She's listening right now.
It's not true.
The study said something like you need to do, if you take one piece of content or one message and you need to take it in 14 different directions in order for it to be effective. And, you have to put it out on Facebook and all the social media and Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter, all these other places. And then maybe you have to email it out. And after a while, Elise and I were laughing because, to do that, you'd need a staff of like 35 people to get it done once.
Right, right.
And so I think people get a lot, especially small business owners and even companies that don't have big marketing staffs, are like, how are we supposed to actually market ourselves when we're being told that we have to do 10,000 things.
Well, you know what I run into, and I've talked before, and we advertise or promote with WGN this little travel thing
yep.
I do. And so I'm that guy because I'm thinking, okay, I've got to tweet this out. I've got to put this on Facebook. I got to create a travel Facebook page. I've got a book Facebook page. And what happens is I start out with the best intentions on all those platforms,
yep.
and then I forget about them.
Right, and then they get stale.
Then they get, and that becomes, you end up doing yourself more damage because
right.
someone's going to say, oh, I'll check this out. And you go to that Facebook page and there's nothing there.
Yeah, so it's funny. My wife and I just adopted a little kitten because we wanted a kitten and I wanted a, it's called a rag doll. But there's a, it's being bred by a vet out in King County. And I said, you know, your website is not very good.
Yeah.
I said, could we do a little bartering for, you know, a little price break
sure,
on the
right.
kitten? And so we talked about it. And
how much
she was
kittens
that,
go for?
I'm not going to say, but too much. But the same concept there is that she's trying to market the selling kittens, right?
Yeah.
And, she's like, I need help with this website. And one of the things that she realized is more people were coming to her through Facebook, yet she had to have a website for Google results when people would, you know, put in ragdoll
right.
or whatever. And so I found a website, platform that would feed Facebook into the actual website.
Oh, that's perfect.
So these types of sort of simple answers to what could be something complex is really where we're trying to talk to people about how they really need to think about marketing.
I'll give you another perfect. It's a parallel example to that one. No, we're going to an event at a spot a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, it was like a friend of my wife's told her about it. I'm like, well, that sounds hinky. So I'm trying to find it. And I go to this place's website. And there's nothing on it about what's going on that night. And I'm getting so frustrated. And we're driving, and I'm expressing my frustration to my wife's friend in the car. And she goes, oh, I found it all on Facebook. It's all on Facebook.
Yes.
So I was talking to the owner that night, and I said, we were talking about maybe having him on one day. And he said, well, two things. He said, we don't really update the web page.
The website, right.
Which is disastrous. And then he handed me a card, and he said, oh, and text me. Don't use this email because I don't really check that email.
Right.
And, you know, it was a wonderful night, a great place and all that. I don't mean to disparage that at all, but I think that's one of those things where it's easy for us to say, I'm going to do this and this and this and this, and then they fall by the wayside.
Yeah, because somebody told them that that's what they needed to do.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they have to, we talk on the podcast about sort of the KISS principle, the keep it simple, stupid. And as much as you can.
Not highway to hell.
Or, right. No. Well, we could talk about that too. They kept it simple too.
They did.
But, the idea that you've got to figure out maybe ways to do, you know, the whole work smarter, not harder stuff. But when you're marketing, the ability to kind of link things together, like the Facebook feed onto a webpage.
Yeah, I love that.
Right. And people are realizing technology because you can't be on everything all the time.
I have my Twitter feed show up on Facebook.
Yep.
Now, but that could
that's
point
a double-edged
to a risk,
sword,
right?
Right.
Okay, you tell me why, and I'll tell you why.
I mean, if I were your friend on Facebook, which we're not, but we could be, I would start to get annoyed by all these tweets.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, and then I'm writing what would be a Facebook post with hashtags on it or at signs, and so it clearly shows the Facebook audience that they're not my first choice.
Right. Right,
well, it does. I mean, or that
and
might
it'll
be,
say via something, too, right?
Right. So, yeah. I mean, not that they aren't my first choice, but that's sort of the impression.
Well, and it's funny, too, because Instagram feeds right into Facebook because they're obviously Instagram's actually owned by Facebook. And so when you do something in Instagram, they'll give you an option to post to Facebook. And sometimes it makes sense to do that because you want images because the world is all about images now, not words. And so, you know, it's nice to post that on Facebook. On the other hand, if you follow Instagram and Facebook, you're seeing the same thing twice.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to where we started. I got something I want to market. I want to sell. I got 50,000 ways to do it. What's your best advice for
me? Well, my best advice is something I call, you know, go figure, right? Figure out who your audience is, figure out what they want, and then figure out how best to engage them by not necessarily going to every place where you can engage them, but pick the one best place.
So don't be afraid of not engaging a Twitter audience if your clients are Facebook people.
Unless you have the absolute time and resources to do it, I think you have to start simple.
John Byrne is the co-host of Monday Morning Marketing. You can hear it at WGNplus.com each week. Thanks for coming by, John. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.